Well, as you know, every show has a theme, and today's theme is cruel irony. My next guest experienced life's 1980s to work on seagoing tugs and other ships, where, get this, he read the entire Encyclopedia Britannica, although he only admits to getting up to the letter U. Then in the early 1990s, due to various incidents and close calls with mortality and death of loved ones, Largo became fixated on listing and examining the exact causes of death in America. His effort culminated in the publication called Final Exits. His latest book is called God's Lunatics, Lost Souls, False Prophets, Martyred Saints, Murderous Cults, Demonic Nuns, and Other Victims of Man's Eternal Search for the Divine. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, now it's our pleasure. Now, first of all, love the title of your book. Absolutely love it. You had me at Demonic Nuns. I mean, that was it right there. But you're best known as the Truman Capote of Kaput for your fascination with death and sort of the way that we die. What caused you to switch your research from the Grim Reaper to the religious practices and cults?
Well, I think death and religion and studying them, they kind of intertwine. It's very difficult a lot of times to study about mortality rates or mortality trends without having to going to the religious customs, because many times particular religious beliefs or customs throughout the ages would dictate how a person actually died. For example, say like in the Victorian era, where most of the morphine and cocaine and all these things were in ordinary elixirs, medicines, but yet at the end of their life, they withdrew those painkillers because they believed that a person had to have a death that was, the suffering had to be part of their end days. So it made dying much more difficult in the Victorian time. So those kind of correlations always seem to tie together.
Very interesting. And I didn't know that they withdrew the morphine and everything else to get the pain and the suffering on the way out, simply based on religious beliefs that life is hard and then you die?
Well, yeah. I mean, in other words, it would give you time to, that was the belief at the time, in order for you to go through all your past sins so that, salvation would be the ultimate goal. But withdrawing, withholding medication and things at the end, it's an unknown amount of how many fatalities that had caused. The point was that many of these various religious beliefs had a way of affecting culture and either helping in longevity or, increasing chances of a shortened lifespan.
Hmm. We're talking to Michael Largo, everybody, author of the book God's Lunatics, which, again, I just love the title on that. Michael, your book is like an encyclopedia. I mean, it literally goes from A to Z as you go through it. The first entry is abracadabra. What's the significance of abracadabra?
Well, it was such a, it's always a silly word. We, in our culture, we think it is some stage magician's incantation. But studying the etymology of that word, it was very interesting that it was tied to a medical formula. It was believed to be handed down through the Egyptians, and it was written as an inverted pyramid, and they would use these coded letters in that arrangement of an inverted pyramid to put it up to the grid of as a grid when someone was infirm. They would use their exhalation from their nostrils or their mouth and try to determine how that mist separated through these letters, and then determine the right cause of treatment. So it was originally, instead of a magic thing, which was the hope that it would cure, that's where it was passed down, but it was originally part of the prescription formula for a medical doctor in the Roman times, tracing back to the Egyptian period.
Wow, that's fascinating. We're talking to Michael Largo, everybody. Your book really examines all kinds of different stories, some very humorous and very interesting stories in there. You're talking about many things, including murderous cults. So I wanted to ask you, in your research, why is it that cults like Jonestown and Ruby Ridge, what is it that fascinates us about cults? What is it that forces us to join cults?
Well, one of the interesting things about that is that almost 90% of all the cults, I listed them all and studied them all, and again, it tied to the mortality rate, was that I found that by using one particular recruitment technique, so to say, in other words, saying that the apocalypse of whatever nature it's going to be, either it be nuclear or divine apocalypse, some type of apocalypse, some deadline was used in order to gather followers quickly. So under those auspices, anything would be followed. In other words, in order for you to be saved, you would have to do X, Y, Z. So apocalypse, or the fear of being lost or eternally gone, is really the most fundamental technique for recruiting apocalypses. So Jonestown is one of that. I mean, even back in the book, I talk about, you know, you talk about a little bit of humorous stuff. There was in 1950s, there was a woman called Mrs. Keach from Missouri.
From Missouri, right.
And she believed that she was signaled out by extraterrestrials to receive messages from them that the world was going to end exactly, I think it was December 21st, 1954. But if everyone followed what she said they needed to do, they would be saved and a spaceship would land on her lawn. And so you couldn't wear medals, so people were cutting, you know, the metal from their zippers, all of this stuff, crazy stuff of believing that they were going to be left behind if they didn't follow these certain end-of-time scenarios. So that was a major recruitment in those deadly cults. And, that was a little sillier one, that one, but, you know, the Jonestown is definitely not.
Well, definitely Jonestown had more serious overtones to it. Michael, I'm glad you brought up Mrs. Keach, because we're going to talk about some of the more interesting characters a little bit later in something I call the quickfire, where I'll give you some of the names of interesting stories that you had in the book. But on the subject of recruitment, on the subject of cults, I found it interesting that prophets who predict the end of the world die, on average, by age 35.
Right.
Why is that?
Yeah, it's part of this. One of the interesting things when you tie looking at mortality to religion, some of the interesting factors are what psychologists call self-fulfilling prophecy. In other words, if you start believing that you're going to be sick, or you start believing ultimately that you're going to be well, certain types of things start to make this occur. Sometimes, obviously, if you're so ill, you know, there's no matter of positivity is going to change that. But oftentimes, this self-fulfilling prophecy takes place where, you know, I'm going to die in such a date. And it's not only with religion, but when you do the same numbers on rock stars who used to say that they weren't going to live to the 30s, which I examined in another book that I have, Genius and Heroin, many of them would actually die before they were 30, because they, you know, not only their lifestyle, but they self-predicted this to happen.
Well, I'm going to veer off the path here for just a minute, since you brought up the rock stars predicting their own death. I mean, Jim Morrison died early, Hendrix died early, Janis Joplin died early. That's great. But then how does your book explain Keith Richards?
Right. Well, he must have a self-fulfilling prophecy of to never die. I'm not sure. But
all right. Well, back to your current book, which is God's Lunatics, and it's got a long subtitle in there. But I found it fascinating. One of your favorite theses in the book is the ancient astronaut theory. First of all, what is it, and why are you so fascinated with it?
You know, we still don't actually know science or religion. You know, the big question is, where do we come from? You know, that's been plaguing philosophers and theologians and just regular folks for centuries. But it's just an interesting theory. It tries to explain why we have so many unanswered things. And that theory is that the ancient astronauts, or extraterrestrials of similar looking as we are, seeded the planet with it as a genetic experiment, and creatures like Cro-Magnon were weeded out not because of natural selection, but because they were failed genetic engineering experiments. So there's a number of religions that the earliest religions, like Jainism and some earlier Hinduism, they have, you know, artwork of creatures hovering above what we would call, you know, flying saucers today. So it was always part of the man's imagination to try to come up with some answer to, you know, why are we here? Why are we on this planet? What are we supposed to do? Where do we come from? So the ancient astronaut theory, you know, doesn't kind of evolutionists and divine creationists. I mean, it kind of fits both of them in some kind of bizarre way.
Well, I love it. It sort of reminds me of the book Chariot of the Gods from the 1970s, and that whole theory revived again. So.
Right.
In your book, Michael Largo, God's Lunatics, you were pretty even-handed in terms of dealing with all the major world religions. However, reading the book, Mormonism sort of takes a hit, pretty hard hit in your book. What is it about the Mormon religion that lends itself more towards your book of cults and God's Lunatics?
Well, you know, I was on another show with Mormons recently, and I really didn't realize that it had took such a hard hit. I mean, I kind of just was focusing on the origins of that particular religion. It just seemed to be a very unusual story of how, golden tablets were found and certain glasses were given. I tried to stay it straight. I didn't try to condemn or any religion. I tried not to disrespect any religion in the book as much as possible. So I don't really see it as a hit myself. Some of the customs I think are interesting as far as culturally, avoidance of caffeine and things like this. There are good health codes. Many religions have health codes. Jewish religions, Christians, they all have some kind of health codes to try to help the people. But I don't really see it that way, but some people have mentioned to me that,
remember that takes a hit. Those were my words. I'm sorry to try to put words in your mouth there. But I thought in general you were fairly even-handed with religions. Now, let me ask you, what is a Jewish sukkah, and how does that fit into your research?
Well, one of the things that I tried to do while writing this book and over the years is I've always been fascinated by other religions. As you mentioned in the bio, I was started as a straight, Catholic altar boy. So as you mentioned, I probably have the license revoked by now, but after this book. But I tried to go to many religions and many churches just to not have that condemnation or any kind of negative feeling towards any religion. So I would go to churches, sit in them, hear their service, try to be open-minded, see what the value of their customs are to the people that are involved. And they all have their own merit, of course, as long as they don't try to convert others or cause harm to other people, as you mentioned, the cults. But I tried to go to Jewish religions. I went to all types of Christian denominations. Even went to Haiti to try to see some voodoo ceremonies and Santeria in Miami, which is a saint religion. So I tried to participate in some of these things as sort of like a journalist to firsthand of what was going on.
We're talking to Michael Largo, everybody, author of the book God's Lunatics, Lost Souls, False Prophets, Martyred Saints, Murderous Cults, Demonic Nuns, and Other Victims of Man's Eternal Search for the Divine. Michael, we've got to take a short break here, but when we come back, I want to do something that I referred to earlier known as our quick fire. I'm going to give you just the names of some interesting characters in the book that you did in your research, and I'd like you to tell us the stories about it. Don't answer these now, but when we come back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
I think your brain produces a chemical that blocks out my voice.
What? Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. My special guest today is Michael Largo. He's the author of the book, God's Lunatics, Lost Souls, False Prophets, Martyred Saints, Murderous Cults, Demonic Nuns, and Other Victims of Man's Eternal Search for the Divine. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is cruel irony. Michael, before we went away to the break, I said when we came back we were going to do a quick fire, and I just want to go through some of the more interesting characters in your book and the research that you did, ask you to tell us a little bit about the stories behind each of these people. And I'm going to start with the patron saint of ice skaters.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah, that's a really great story. That was called Saint Lidwina. She was from Holland, and it was in 1300s, late 1300s. She was skating home from school one day, and she fell down and broke a rib. It's unknown exactly what was happened, but in a short version, she started to become very ill, and she had total paralysis. But she also people started to think that she had a divine connection, that she could, when people went near her, they were healed, even though she was sick. It was later found out that she may have been the first saint actually suffering from some sort of muscular dystrophy, but it's not certain as well exactly what it was. multiple sclerosis. The interesting thing about her, the visions, because this is one saint that we actually had some records of people talking about her diet and stuff, and it seemed that she only survived on a little bit of apples and drinking salt water.
Yeah.
So that might have explained her vision. But nevertheless, she's heralded as the patron saint of ice skaters, and they wear skate angels today for this St. Louina, which I think is kind of the irony of a lot of these saints, especially religious Catholic saints in particular. She didn't have a good time skating. I mean, she fell down and got ill. So a lot of these saints, like the patron saint of outhouses and all of these kind of crazy saints, you know. So that's the thing with the St. Louina of the ice skating thing. How did she get that moniker?
St. Louina, the patron saint of ice skaters, from her rib to God's ears. That's all I can say. All right, next up, John Frum of the United States Navy.
Oh, yeah, that was a great one. Now, here's an example of how religions can form. It was an island at Tania in the South Pacific. And these islanders didn't have much contact with outside world, with the outside civilization. But as progress came around them, they would notice certain goods washing up upon shore that were different, and they started to believe that they were being provided by the Great Spirit, and washing machines or whatever it was starting to come up. So these were strange objects. So to make a long story short, this one Navy vet obviously washed ashore on this island. And survived right after World War I, and he had found out that the islanders had this belief that a Messiah was coming to save their civilization. So he assumed the role of the Messiah. So that's what happened was that he became like their cult leader, and he mixed. We found out in World War II when the soldiers actually came there that their new religion had saints such as Santa Claus, John the Baptist. They had a ritual of passing around cigarettes and chocolate bars as a religious significance. So, and we really don't know his name, but it was a shortened from John from America. So the actual record is John Frum, who his actual fate is pretty much unknown. But we try to believe he was pushed into the volcano that was on the island that they worshipped, or. But they still expect him to come back in 2015, so there's good news on that.
Right around the corner. You never know. You never know. There are many stories. The flying nuns. It's more than one flying nun, and we're not talking about Sally Fields here, are we?
No. There was an original flying nun. She actually was pretty good at it, apparently. She was never allowed to be the patron saint of aviation because that went to another saint, but she could actually, actually fly. Apparently, sitting in trees and whatnot. But I'm not certain why she wasn't canonized. She was a French sister. Her name was Baudet, I believe, and she was in Bethlehem. But the records of her flying and sitting in trees for hours. Are pretty extensive, but it's interesting that she's not the only one. There was a Joseph of Capertino in Italy who was just flying all around. Even when they brought him to the Pope, they had to hold him down because after he kissed the Pope's ring, he apparently flew into the air like about 20 feet. So, but the interesting thing was in the 1600s, so they didn't allow him to fly because they thought it was some kind of possibly a demonic possession.
I'm surprised that they didn't try to exorcise him.
Yeah, well, he was this particular individual is a very interesting story. This guy Joseph, he's actually now the patron saint of people with learning disabilities because from looking at his record, what we would describe as somebody seriously would have mental issues, mental challenges. It seems to be that's what his case was, but. He would go into these awes and wonder, and I counted over 100 different journals and reports of this guy levitating pretty high. Some of them are only a palm's width off the floor or or once during serving mass, or these kind of things. But he's actually the patron saint of aviation, Saint Joseph, and the Sister Baudet didn't make the cut, even though she was seems to be the original flying nun.
We're talking to Michael Largo, everybody, author of the book God's Lunatics, and we're playing the quick fire right now. Let me give you another one, a little closer to home here in the United States, Sister Amy.
Oh, Sister Amy. Well, she was kind of, I would call her the founder of media televangelism, or evangelism using the media, because she was the first one to really bring her message to the streets. She, you know, and this is a woman in the early 1900s, which was, you know, a difficult thing for, you know, now we, you know, everybody's, you know, we have equal rights for everybody. Back then, it wasn't such the case. And she actually just left her family after being sick. She said, if I get well, if I, you know, stop my depression, and it appears to have been some sort of post-mortem depression, then she got into a car and actually just drove through the country in a gospel car, preaching from the side of the car. And she went out to, you know, make a huge four-square gospel church in the California area. But, you know, she had a bunch of scandals involved with her, as most of them do. And but at that her time, she was considered a moral authority in the 1920s and 30s. Hmm. But she was the first to really use the media, you know, to use the radio, to use the, you know, television really wasn't invented then, but using radio exclusively and getting out there and, you know, with megaphones and stuff like this. So she's kind of, people study her who want to start a mega church or start an evangelist. They study her techniques, which were very effective.
We're talking to Michael Largo, whose book is God's Lunatics. And some of the things that your book promises to address, Michael, are great. Some of them are very practical and others are not. But how to identify the Antichrist, we want to come back and talk to that. But more practical on a day-to-day basis, your book promises to help us spot a religious suicide bomber. How can we identify?
I mean, the thing is that about there's certain words, it's very hard to, you know, the suicide bombers, you know, again, they're believing, their fanaticism is believing that their actions killing others is going to get them a better place in heaven. And especially in that realm, we're not certain if the word means if they're getting 70 virgins or 70 raisins, as far as an Arabic scholar told me the word is very difficult. But nevertheless, they say certain words. So in the book, I mean, I can't even pronounce some of the words, but I listed some of the words that are said. Is probably the only record of what is said before the suicide bomber ignites himself. And it's sort of kind of like, you know, God's will, but it's pronounced in Arabic. And it's in an appropriate time. In other words, that's something that, you know, in America we might say, oh, thank God or whatever. But there's a certain phrase that's noted in any type, whenever eyewitnesses survive suicide bombers, that this certain phrase is used again and again in an inappropriate time, and it's only seconds after that's said until the person ignites themselves.
The deed is done, as it were. Well, we're coming up on a really monumental time in history. It's one of those pivotal points for cults and predictions and that sort of stuff, and that's the year 2012. There's a movie about it. There's a lot been written about it, many books. What is the truth behind the apocalyptic predictions of 2012?
Well, 2012 stems from a Mayan calendar. That was the why this became such a date in the future. And, you know, there were many calendars. We really only have a standardized calendar for maybe the last 100 or so years. Even George Washington, there were two calendars going on when he was born, so he could have two different birthdays. So everyone was trying to make different calendars. But it was discovered that the Mayans had a particular calendar, and they had many of them. But they had one that was centered on the calendar based on the planet Venus. Which was pretty unusual. And they're actually a Venus cycle, and they were pretty accurate where they measured the annual measurement that they put into 585 days as opposed to 365. And the interesting thing is that this went on from maybe 2000 BC, and it goes all the way up to December 21st, 2012, and that's when that Mayan calendar stopped counting time. And that's where this 212 comes in. So, and going back to ancient astronaut theory, So that's where some of this old beliefs are tied in, where people think, well, that's the day when these ancient astronauts will come back and give humanity another calendar or a seminar. I don't know.
We'll all be brought up to speed at that time. We're talking to Michael Largo, everybody, author of the book God's Lunatics. You've done some phenomenal research on this, Michael. We've only got about a minute left, but of all of the stories, all of the research, everything that you've done, really, what stands out in your mind as the most remarkable?
Well, I think the most remarkable is that we still have, even with all our technology and all of the things that we have at our fingertips as far as gathering information, we still have this human quest to try to figure out stuff, to try to figure out what, you know, where do we come from, how should we live, more importantly. And I think that all of the religions try to address that, which is absolutely, could be very helpful in living well. And I guess, but one of the things is what I was stressing is that whenever this becomes fanatical, whenever this becomes you're trying to convert others to your beliefs, this is where throughout history, you know, massive wars, inquisitions, and even now, I mean, you know, the world's divided in people trying to make other people believe in things that, you know, they believe in. So I think that's probably hopefully the theme of the book, while trying to also, you know, educate and entertain in some way.
Well, it is an entertaining book. Michael Largo, author of the book God's Lunatics, Lost Souls, False Prophets, Martyred Saints, Murderous Cults, Demonic Nuns, and Other Victims of Man's Eternal Search for the Divine. Michael, you are just a fun guest. We're glad to have you on the show. We'll talk to you down the line.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Now, if you missed this interview or any of my interviews, you can find them archived up on my website, brainstormingonline.com. That brings us to the end of another show. You've been listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. Join us every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Coming up next is Living Your Inspired Life with Susan Burrell. We end each show by saying, go out and be the change you want to see in the world. Remember, the leaders of the past didn't hold with today's conventions, and neither will the leaders of tomorrow. We'll talk to you then. Bye.